This is CBS Eye on the World. I'm John Batchelor. Turkey. I welcome Akın Erdemir, the Foundation for the Defense of Democracies, the director of the Turkey program, to help me understand the many faces of the all-powerful president of Turkey, Recep Erdogan. These headlines are starkly contradictory. For example, within these hours, Turkey's Erdogan says he will visit UAE in February. Turkish President Recep Tayyip Erdogan has said he plans to pay a return visit to the United Arab Emirates in February. At the same time, the London Times, Turkey's middle class abandon Erdogan as rising prices and repression take toll. At the same time, from Israel, Turkey's Erdogan looks to mend ties with Israel, but trust remains an issue. I fall exhausted at Akın's feet because in addition to all this, the president of Turkey is making adamant statements that he will never retreat on his opinion of the rates. The rates. He's talking about being his own chairman of his own Federal Reserve. And his idea of rates has crashed the Turkish lira, though the recent report is that Turkey's GDP has rebounded 7.5% coming out of the virus. There is no prospect of that continuing, given the damage to the currency of Turkey. Akın, I don't ask you to make sense of it. I just ask you, is there a plan here? Is Erdogan going in one particular direction for something he wants? Good evening to you.
Good evening, John. Thanks for having me. So what we have here is Erdogan tackling two problems at once, two problems of his own making. The first one, Turkey's increasing isolation in the Eastern Mediterranean and the Middle East. You know, over the years, Erdogan's support for the Muslim Brotherhood and other radical Islamists have alienated Egypt, Israel, the United Arab Emirates, and other literal states in the East Med. And when all these countries came together in an unprecedented way, including Greece, Cyprus, Egypt, Israel, Jordan, the United Arab Emirates, Saudi Arabia, Erdogan decided to reverse course. You know, this has been an unprecedented isolation of Turkey. And now Erdogan is reaching out to Egypt, Israel, and the United Arab Emirates to see if he can mend ties. But at the same time, there is an important economic story here. Because as we speak, the Turkish lira has nearly lost half of its value against the US dollar year to date. And all of this has been precipitated by Erdogan's unorthodox economic view that the way to fight inflation is not by raising interest rates, but by lowering interest rates. Now, this goes against, you know, economics as a science and has been disastrous for Turkey. And given the devaluation in the Turkish lira, the double-digit inflation, and the massive impoverishment of the middle classes, now Erdogan desperately needs foreign capital injections. So his reach out to some of the neighbors in the Middle East and the Eastern Med is also aimed at boosting bilateral trade, as well as attracting particularly Gulf capital. But whether Erdogan can succeed in the, you know, year and a half until Turkey's 2023 presidential and parliamentary elections, you know, is really the million-dollar question.
The million-dollar question, million-and-a-half question is, Erdogan and your essay most recently in the Foundation for the Defense of Democracy, Erdogan and hostage diplomacy, taking a young couple who traveled to Turkey from Israel on a vacation, taking them hostages because, and don't even fill in the blanks, there was no rational explanation, something about spies, for heaven's sakes. This is not a one-off. He's done this to journalists. He's done this to people in his own country. Why? Does he gain from this because his reputation gets worse?
Now, this is a practice that Erdogan kicked off in the aftermath of Turkey's abortive coup in 2016. As Ambassador Eric Edelman, former U.S. ambassador to Turkey, and I explained in a report we penned for the Foundation for Defense of Democracies, there were 50 Western nationals and permanent residents who became targets of, you know, Turkey's politicized courts. They were all charged with ludicrous charges of military and political espionage, terrorism, coup plotting, and they were all victims of lengthy pretrial detentions without a shred of evidence. Now, over the years, Erdogan finally started, toning down what they call hostage diplomacy, because it really backfired. And our audience would know best the case of Pastor Andrew Brunson, who spent 2 years in a Turkish prison while Erdogan tried to extract concessions from Washington. You know, he tried to trade this U.S. pastor in exchange for the ringleader of Iran's Turkey-based sanctions evasion network, and so on and so forth. And ultimately, Erdogan did manage to help release a Turkish Hamas suspect from an Israeli prison shortly before Brunson's release from Turkey. So Erdogan knows these Western hostages give him some leverage to deal with Turkey's Western counterparts. And in the latest case, which lasted, thankfully, only 6 days for this poor Israeli couple who got entangled in Erdogan's hostage diplomacy, Erdogan used the opportunity to, you know, reconnect with Israel. He had a phone call with the Israeli president and the prime minister, and the Israeli media leaked that Erdogan said that he would help release this couple, but only if high-level Israeli politicians publicly recognize him for his help, thank him for his help. And actually, they all did. You know, the Israeli president, prime minister, and foreign minister have all acknowledged Erdogan's role, you know, mediation in solving this crisis. But ultimately, I think the sentiment that remains is, you know, Erdogan basically controls Turkey's courts. He leverages political hostages as bargaining chips. And I don't think he emerges from this with a positive image. On the contrary, he becomes very close to another country that uses hostages frequently, namely the Islamic Republic of Iran. And it is really sad that a NATO member state, Turkey, comes close to the Iranian practice of holding political hostages and then bargaining through them.
Aiken, I'm reading a story about the Cuban Missile Crisis, 1962. It's a long time ago. It's the Cold War. But a subplot in it is that the United States at the time felt that it was useful to use Turkey as a bargaining chip. It had to do with deploying short-range missiles that could reach Moscow with nuclear tips. And there was no consultation with the leadership in Turkey. Is that a memory somewhere in the Turkish mind that it has been disrespected by NATO, by the United States, and that Erdogan stands up for us? Does that exist today?
It definitely does, because that was a major shock for the Turkish government of the time. They felt being abandoned at the face of Soviet threat. And in fact, then came a famous quote in Turkish foreign policy when the Turkish prime minister said that a new world can be established and Turkey can find its own place in that new world. So what that referred to was, if, you know, the United States and NATO, you know, abandon Turkey, then Ankara will have to find itself a new space. So this was similar to Turkey's disappointment with the European Union accession process.
Right.
You know, when Turkey similarly felt abandoned. And so this is a leitmotif in Turkish foreign policy, that relations with the West have its ups and downs, and Turkey often finds itself in a, you know, disappointment or in a betrayal, but often failing to see where Turkey also came short on its end of this complex relationship.
I mentioned the 1962 Cuban Missile Crisis because Erdogan was, I believe, 8 years old. And it might be that he was educated in a culture, in a milieu, that said Turkey must stand for itself, must take care of Turkey. A distant view of him is that he's a very effective nationalist. But then we get into the contradictions, as you've just illustrated. Aiken Erdemir of the Foundation for the Defense of Democracies. This is CBS Eye on the World. I'm John Batchelor.
You're listening to CBS Eye on the World with John Batchelor.